The Origin of Life, Accident or Design, by Robert C. Newman. Brief abstract. Where did life come from? Was it an accident or was it designed? What do we mean when we use the term science? Can we recognize the presence of mind scientifically? What are some problems for naturalistic models of the origin of life? We here consider the problems of formation of proteins and nucleic acids, self-replication, bootstrapping, and information. Okay, let's go. What caused life to begin? Did it begin by chance? By the right things just accidentally happening to get a self-replicating system going? Did it happen by design? Was some sort of intelligent intervention needed to get the right things in the right places at the right times? Some suggest as, quote, unscientific, unquote, to postulate that life began by design. Well, that raises the question of what do we mean by science? What do we mean when we say something is, quote, unscientific, unquote? Is science a method in which explanations that include supernatural causes are not allowed? Or is science a procedure which seeks to find out what really happened in history and or what is currently happening now? Science and design. Science already has methods for detecting design. In archaeology or anthropology, distinguishing an arrowhead from an accidentally chipped stone is a method for detecting design. In astrophysics, distinguishing an intelligent radio signal from mere radio noise, the sort of thing that would be involved in SETI, search for extraterrestrial intelligence, is a method of detecting design. Even in ecology, ecologists want to distinguish what we might call natural pollutants from man-made pollutants, that is, accidental pollutants from what we might call designed pollutants in some way or another, whether they just be sloppy pollutants or humanly accidental pollutants or pollutants that are very, intentionally designed and dangerous in one way or another. In these questions of science and design, probably 10,000 bits of the right sort of information are more than sufficient to recognize design in the case of an arrowhead, or the case of an intelligent radio signal, or even in the case of some kind of pollution which might be culpable in some way, that might be such as could involve a lawsuit. But Carl Sagan, in his article Life in the Encyclopedia Britannica, has estimated the simplest sorts of bacteria have about 10 to the 12th power bits of information. So if they've got that much, and 10 to the 4th power bits of the right sort of information are more than sufficient to recognize design, maybe we're looking at design here in life as well. What's wrong with the hypothesis that life arose by accident or chance rather than design? That's what we want to consider here in our talk. Problems with accidental origin. We're going to look at the several topics here. We're going to look at the problems with the formation of proteins, problems with the formation of nucleic acids, problem of self-replication, problem of bootstrapping, and the problem of information. So let's look, first of all, with problems with the formation of proteins. The Miller-Urey experiment in 1953 is often viewed as having solved this problem. Stanley Miller, then a grad student of Harold Urey, performed an experiment in which he passed various gases. They were methane, ammonia, water vapor, and hydrogen gas, I believe, through a closed glass piping system in which the material would pass through a spark chamber and be broken up into pieces, and then the gas would run through a condenser and would come back together again, sometimes back into the same original components and some not. And after running this for about a week, Stanley Miller found some examples of amino acids in this. And so amino acids are precursors of proteins, and this was felt to have solved the problem. This experiment has been frequently repeated under various conditions. However, with all these repetitions, the last information I had, we have yet to produce two of the 20 needed amino acids in any such experiments. Living things that we know about basically have 20 amino acids, and arginine and histidine have yet to be produced in any of these experiments. We regularly produce lots of other amino acids not in the needed 20, and so I suppose the question would be how these, having been formed this way, would be kept out of reactions of this sort. We regularly get lots of other stuff that would reactively interfere with the various steps that would be needed to go on from this, to combine amino acids into proteins and such as well. How do you solve that problem of competing interactions, competing reactions? We also need a reducing atmosphere, less than 1% oxygen, in order for a experiment like this to use, and all of the Miller-Urey type experiments have then been conducted with no oxygen, basically. But the evidence we have of photodissociation of water vapor in the atmosphere producing oxygen would seem to be a problem for this particular thing to work. And then the amino acids in life, except for the one shortest amino acid, are all left-handed, even though naturally produced there would be equal numbers of left- and right-handed amino acids. How did this happen? There's no physical way we know of, without design, if you like, of getting left-handed amino acids in living things. You basically have robot machines, nano-machines, that are constructing left-handed amino acids to make this work. But if you don't have that kind of stuff early on, you're not going to have that stuff until you've really got some kind of very sophisticated life running. So those are problems with the formation of proteins. Problems with the formation of nucleic acids. Robert Shapiro, in his book Origins and in his article, The Improbability of Prebiotic Nucleic Acid Synthesis, has some very powerful material on that. This is a picture of the cover of Shapiro's book Origins, A Skeptic's Guide to the Creation of Life on Earth. Shapiro points out that we get very low yields of nucleic acids even when we use pure chemicals in trying to produce this sort of thing. And of course, the pure chemicals are very much a laboratory sort of thing. They're not very much a nature sort of thing. We need drastically different conditions for various steps in the formation of nucleic acids. Drastically different conditions regarding the acidity of the solution that we're operating with, the temperature of the solution, the presence of various catalysts and such. And this requires some very careful experiment or intervention to make these sort of things work in a laboratory. But do you have that out there in nature? Well, if you do, you're back into a designed origin of life. We keep encountering competing reactions of one sort or another, and how to keep these competing reactions from eating up all your reactants and leaving you with nothing. Well, again, a laboratory where you can get rid of the competing reactions, keep those chemicals out of the whole thing, that will work, but otherwise not. And then how do these nucleotides find each other? Well, of course, you've got the reacting chamber in one specific location, and you're making these things. That's great, but since you have to make different nucleic acids under very different conditions, how do you get the different nucleic acids together? Okay, how do they find one another? Huge, huge problem. Those are problems with formation of nucleic acids. Then we've got the problem of self-replication itself. What's the simplest sort of chemical, biological system that will make a copy of itself? Well, there's been a lot of work done in computer simulation along these lines, and computer simulations indicate that the simplest self-replicators are beyond the probabilistic resources of the universe. I've done some articles in the Journal of the American Scientific Affiliation, a journal now goes by the name Perspectives on Science and Christian Faith. So there are some articles by me in that journal, and some response by John Bile as well. And Then there's this book by Mark Ludwig, Computer Viruses, Artificial Life and Evolution. The upshot of these kind of papers is the chance of something like even a simple self-replicator happening by chance since the Big Bang is the order of something like 1 chance in 10 to the 70th power. It is very, very low, even though self-replicators are not hugely complicated. It's just very, very low. Then we've got the problem of bootstrapping. Evolutionists typically assume that life can get from the simplest possible forms to all the diversity we see today by mutation and natural selection. But there's no evidence that this mutation natural selection process will produce complex mechanisms from simple ones. Consider the analogy of generating meaningful text in, say, English, but you can go Spanish or Russian or whatever, by randomly adding and changing letters, even with natural selection, even with fairly intelligent selection, there's a problem here. The information content of even simple life forms is staggering. Sagan's remark that the bacterium E. coli represented about 10 to the 12th power bits of information, and work that has been done recently on the minimum number of proteins that you would need to be able to run any living things that we know about, and attempts to calculate the minimum below what surviving life looks like. Well, of course, this problem of information content is easy to solve if there's a mind behind the universe, but it seems impossible without one. Some want to try and put this whole debate into two alternatives. The one alternative is life arose by chance, and the other is you Christians believe that life arose in the last 6,000 years by God speaking the word, etc. In other words, they basically try and make a straw man for the other alternative. But 100 years ago, G.K. Chesterton, in his book Orthodoxy, pointed out the Christian is quite free to believe that there's a considerable amount of settled order and inevitable development in the universe. But the materialist is not allowed to admit into his spotless machine the slightest speck of spiritualism or miracle. It's not just those two extreme alternatives. Is there evidence? Is there a need, given the calculations that we're capable of, to postulate a designer behind these things? And it looks to me like there is. So the problems with accidental origin we sketched here are the problem of the formation of proteins, the formation of nucleic acids, problem of self-replication, of bootstrapping to organize complexity, and the problem of information. You can probably come up with some more, and they are, however, pretty substantial ones that we've looked at and need to be thought about, okay? I'm not asking anyone to jump on the bandwagon without looking at the evidence, or to assume that evidence might not or might turn up in the future. Let's just see what we're really facing and try and think seriously. The picture on the right here in this particular spot in the PowerPoint talk is a rotary motor that the E. coli bacteria, the one that Sagan had the 10 to 12 power bits of information for, uses to propel itself around, a spinning motor with lots of parts that moves the E. coli from place to place. Well, that's the end. And it leaves us with the question, where did life come from? Did life arise by accident in a meaningless universe? Or is life itself an indication that we don't live in a meaningless universe, but there is design of some sort in the universe, and that we need to take that into account when we're thinking about what things are all about?